Einstein wasn't the only great physicist to grapple with the deep meaning of religion. The Austrian Wolfgang Pauli was a Nobel Prize-winning physicist who helped lay the foundation for quantum mechanics. While he was in his early 30s, Pauli had an emotional breakdown after a divorce, and he went to the famed psychiatrist Carl Jung for psychotherapy. Jung was amazed to hear Pauli describe his dreams, which seemed to come right out of Jung's ideas about archetypes. Pauli's dreams tapped into all kinds of mythic imagery, especially the mandala.
I come to a strange, solemn house, the house of the gathering. Many candles are burning in the background, arranged in a peculiar pattern, with four points running upward. Outside, at the door of the house, an old man is posted. People are going in. They say nothing and stand motionless in order to collect themselves inwardly. The man at the door says of the visitors to the house, "When they come out again, they are cleansed." I go into the house myself, find I can concentrate perfectly. And then a voice says, "What you are doing is dangerous. Religion is not a tax to be paid so that you can rid yourself of the woman's image, for this image cannot be got rid of. Woe unto them who use religion as a substitute for the other side of the soul's life. They are in error and will be accursed. Religion is no substitute. It is to be added to the other activities of the soul as the ultimate completion. Out of the fullness of life shall you bring forth your religion. Only then shall you be blessed." While the last sentence is being spoken, in the ringing tones I hear distant music, simple chords on an organ, and something about it reminds me of Wagner's Fire Music. And as I leave the house, I see a burning mountain, and I feel the fire that cannot be put out is a holy fire.
Wolfgang Pauli's dream, as read by Carl Schmitt. Jungian analyst David Lindorf has written a book called Pauli and Jung, The Meeting of Two Great Minds. He told Anne Strangechamps that Jung's ideas had a profound impact on Pauli. In fact, Pauli went on to study the history of mysticism and even alchemy, all the while carrying on his groundbreaking work in theoretical physics.
The quantum level of thinking in physics contained a mystery, but he realized that there was a mystery in the unconscious also, and this is what turned his life into being a study that engaged him and Jung for 20 years.
And then the other thing that's so fascinating about that is, you know, most scientists, if they have a spiritual life, they tend to separate it from their scientific work. These are two different realms. But Pauli really believed that these two worlds, science and spirituality or mysticism, could be brought together?
He felt they must be. For the benefit of civilization, he felt that this was a necessary step. It led him back to some studies of the way in which mankind saw science early in the 17th century, where mystery, mysticism, was included in the development of science. Of course, then, with Jung's help, he became interested in alchemy.
But, you know, to say that a theoretical physicist developed a fascination with alchemy is about like saying, you know, he began studying magic. That's a really fascinating thing for a highly trained Western scientist to get absorbed in. What was it that he found so significant about alchemy?
Well, first of all, I think he wouldn't have turned in that direction had he not experienced the theory of the quantum, because everything in quantum theory is a mystery. Feynman said, if you think you understand it, you don't. Now, this is what the physicists had to live with, and they still do today. But because of the fact that Pauli was having these dreams, which are also a mystery, he was ready, I think, to open up to that dimension. But it came because he'd been forced into it through his experience of physics.
Hmm. He had this sort of interesting critique of the development of Western science. Do you remember how it went at all? He believed that at one point, science was a more mystical sort of pursuit.
Well, that's true. Now, the interesting thing is that Newton is known for his quantitative definitions that persist today. But secretly, back some 30 years ago, they found out that Newton was also studying alchemy. So alchemy was not looked down upon. It was looked as a source of knowledge, which Jung interpreted as coming from their own psyche.
I thought the alchemist's great mission was to find the philosopher's stone and figure out a way to turn base metal into gold.
There are two things that happened to alchemy. One is that it became philosophical. And a few of the alchemists in the 16th century and before looked at the philosophy behind alchemy, where another group was more interested in what turned into being chemistry.
So at the philosophical level, what sort of alchemical insights appealed to Pauli and to Jung?
First, look at Jung. He found the dreams of his patients and of himself oftentimes had imagery which made no sense whatsoever until he found books on alchemy contained sort of the rudiments of those symbols. And that helped Jung to have confidence in the idea that there is a collective unconscious. Now, Pauli also tuned into this because of his own dreams. And Jung said that Pauli knew more about alchemy than any other physicist.
A square space with complicated ceremonies going on in it, the purpose of which is to transform animals into men. Two snakes moving in opposite directions have to be got rid of at once. Animals are there, foxes and dogs. The people walk around the square and must let themselves be bitten in the calf by these animals at each of the four corners. If they run away, all is lost. Now, the higher animals come on the scene, bulls and ibexes. Four snakes glide into the four corners. Then the congregation files out. Two sacrificial priests carry in a huge reptile, and with this they touch the forehead of a shapeless animal lump, or life mass, and out of it there instantly rises a human head. Transfigured. A voice proclaims, "These are attempts at being."
So he found in alchemy a model that could give him understanding of his dreams. But I want to say one thing that came later. When his dreams after the war turned to another way of expressing themselves, he realized that there was a way in which the physicists had an opportunity to see a mystery in matter that really was there, that the alchemists only imagined.
So he believed that quantum mechanics, quantum physics, was in some ways a modern form of alchemy?
Yes. And the big difference was that instead of being a psychic element of their imagination, it was real. And this led to one of the great problems that he and Jung encountered, because he insisted that there really was a mystery in matter. And Jung had a hard time with that because he saw everything from a psychological point of view and said that the mystery is in the psyche.
So Pauli really believed that the unconscious could influence matter?
Yes. What Pauli did was, early on, he discovered that there are similarities between the psychic realm and the quantum level. It's at the quantum level where the mysteries occur. In other words, there's a religious dimension to our psyche that can be experienced. That includes the quantum level.
I can imagine that the closer Pauli and Jung became and the more absorbed Pauli got in Jung's theories of synchronicity, there's another uncanny aspect to this, which is one of the famous things people say about Pauli. They refer to the Pauli effect. Can you explain what that was?
I knew you'd have to mention that sooner or later. People saw that his presence affected things.
Like what?
Well, there was a man by the name of Stern who worked with him in Hamburg, and he was an experimental physicist who didn't want Pauli to be even in the neighborhood if he ran an experiment. He said things went wrong.
What, experiments blew up? Equipment broke just because Pauli was around?
Yeah. I had an experience with Marcus Fiertz, which really was very valuable. He was a good friend of Pauli's, and I had a lot of contact with him in writing this book. Fiertz said, no, he said, there was no doubt. He said, if you knew Pauli, you knew the Pauli effect. Now, there's a little joke about this that you have to think to get it. He was visiting a couple of physicists' laboratories. They thought, let's play a joke on him. So they put a canister of water above the door so that in walking in, the door would dump the water on him. They thought this would be like, oh, the Pauli effect as a joke. They tested it again and again. It worked. When Pauli walked in, it didn't work.
So the Pauli effect worked on other people, not on Pauli himself.
And I attended a meeting one time in Pauli's centennial, and some of the old-timers were there to speak about Pauli and their experience with him. And one said, the one thing to remember about the Pauli effect is that it never affected Pauli.
David Lindorf talking with Anne Strainchamps. Lindorf is the author of the book Pauli and Jung, The Meeting of Two Great Minds.